Judy, McLeod is north of Cardston and west of Lethbridge. I made a mistake on that. But anyway, Ray finished his mission. Glenn had a good mission in England. He had some real fine experiences. Over there, the mission president tried out the plan, and you worked the plan of when they called you to be a district leader or whatever. They'd call you for 4 months, and then they'd let you go back to work. And gosh, Glenn had a lot of political jobs, and he did just fine in England, and did fine as a missionary, and Ray had done fine in Canada. Now here Jed was heading for good old New England. Now, I put in here the tape earlier about the trip going after Jed. And Jed had a good 2 years. Jed was out about a year and a half. And I told him that if he got discouraged, let me know and I'd straighten him out. And I made an agreement with Jed, and I think I did the other ones. I tried to make it with all the missionaries that left home. But I know particularly I did with Jed. And I said, now, Jed, both the mission president and I expect you to live the rules. I expect you to study up on the rules of the mission. I expect you to live them. And he said, all right, I will. And he told me afterwards, he said, you know, that was a good thing you did that. One time there was a group of missionaries together, and somebody suggested a little nonsense, and somebody suggested a little more, and finally I said, no, I can't do that. And they said, why? He said, when I left home, I promised my dad that I would live the mission rules. And when I go home, he's going to shake my hand, and he's going to say, well, and I'm going to say yes or no, and that's all there'd be to it. And he said, I've never lied to my dad yet, and I don't want to lie to him then, so I won't do it. Well, one other boy said, well, I don't believe I want to either, and another one said, and so because of that commitment that Jade and I had with one another, it saved a little nonsense being done. Now we got Jed home, and, you know, and this is the kind of way it was. I've often thought if my older kids, as they'd gone on to missions and then on to college, when they go on their mission, they never really come home. Golly sake. Had the older boys never left home, I'd have never got the younger ones to where they got to go or got to be. Jed came home. We got home about 1st July, 4th of July, 3rd of July, somewhere. We were around there in about a week while Mark and Craig left, a week or so, Mark and Craig left to go on the Jamboree. But anyway, Neil had kind of run things, been a good scheduler. Jed had worked around for different people, and then he went out to the year from high school. He went out. Aaron was Irma's husband, manager of a big ranch out by Malta, Decalo, out by Decalo, east of Decalo, on old Raft River. And Jed hired in out there as his irrigator, and a pair of gum boots and straw hat, tore the sleeves out of his shirt, and he carried that shovel and irrigated all summer long. And, gosh, he did fine. And he went to school, and kind of the year before, Jed worked around different people. And so by the time Jed got home, Neil had kind of run things around here for almost 4 years. They milked cows up to Gilbert's. He scheduled that milking. Reginald's health wasn't very good. Between Mark and Craig and Neil, they milked all those cows most of the time. Well, I'd gotten the habit of talking to Neil, and I, gosh, there for a couple of years, a year and a half, he was, at that time they had a president of the priest quorum. Well, time he scheduled that milking, and time he scheduled running around here at home, things to be done here, and run the MIA program for the bishop. He was just busy. He's a cranberry merchant. And he and I had gotten the habit of on Sunday afternoon, we'd sit down and visit a few minutes and to figure out what needed to be done the next week. And that's the way we'd gone. I'd kind of left it to him, and I've often thought raising a family was just like General Robert E. Lee told about running the Civil War. From a Confederate standpoint, he said, of all my generals, I used to give them complete and detailed instructions of what to do, right to the minute detail. But to General Stonewall Jackson, I say, General Jackson, would you take the left flank or the right flank or the spearhead or wherever I want him? He'd say, yes, sir. What else, General Lee? And I'd say, well, you'll know what to do when you get there. You'll know. And that's about the way it is run the family. Some kids don't want you to tell them much, just a kind of a general idea, and then some others want it right down to the minute detail. Sometimes you get a little confused of which kid you're talking to. But Neil had done all this, and so when Jed come home, I said to Jed, you're not really going to be home that long. You'll go to school this fall. You can find your job around. If you don't mind taking orders from Neil, then I don't have to worry about you. And he said, that don't sound too bad. And a couple of 3 weeks, he said, hey, Dad, do I have to take orders from my kid brother? I laughed and said, I've heard that before somewhere. No, I said, it isn't that bad, is it? I said, if you'll sit back and take a look at it, I don't think it's that bad. I said, you know, you and Neil are both going to go to school, college this fall, I hope. And Neil needs to live down there to kind of get over being homesick before he goes on a mission. And he's got a scholarship, $100 a month in tuition and books, and so. And anyway, So after talking, he's a good manager, good farmer. And him and Dad had good communications, but if he hadn't been here for a couple of years, why, maybe Dad had learned to communicate with somebody else. I don't know. Anyway. But I'm going to tell this story, and I hope nobody's offended at it. When Neil got ready to go on a mission, I didn't have anybody take his place. I didn't have Craig ready. I didn't have Mark ready. I'd tell Craig what to do, and Craig would say, oh, I'm only going to be around here a year once you tell Mark. Mark would say, well, it isn't my turn until next year. And I said, well, one of you pollockers don't take lead. I'm going to make Nancy boss, and you take orders from her. Because the way I operate, I got to depend on somebody. I'm not here that much. Well, anyway, Neil left, and I had Mark changing the oil in the pump. Well, Julia decided that Gary was in her way, and she had to send him down after the oil. And he went down and said, I got to have the oil to put it in the lawnmower. I never did figure out why he didn't push the lawnmower down there and put the oil in it. But him and Mark got into a biff, and they never put the oil in the lawnmower nor the motor either. Then when they went out to start, they didn't stay to see that the oil pressure come on to kick it off of safety. They had it on and burnt that motor up. Cost $1,000 to fix that motor. And we had an awful time. Land like it a bald. I realized that I had gotten a habit with Neil of just, hey, how about this and this and this, and then let it go. But I should have kept closer tab, and we wouldn't have burnt that motor up. But anyway, then I knew what General Lee was talking about. I'll never forget Mark when Craig left a year later. Why, he said to Reed, he said, well, I guess I've got to do it now. I can't blame it on Craig. Well, Craig kind of thought Mark ought to do it, and Mark thought Craig ought to do it. But anyway, when Craig left, Mark took over. By the time Neil got home from his mission, Mark was just as good a manager as ever had. And I remember he saying, as we were getting ready to go to Salt Lake to meet Neil off that airplane, he said, you gonna put Neil back, boss? And I looked at him, and I could see the concern. Mark had come a long ways. And I had good communication with Mark. And I said, no, I'm not changing bosses. And you get along with Neil? Neil and Jed clashed a little when Jed came home, but then, don't you think you and Neil can get along? Well, the day we went and got him, we hurried back from the airport. There was a Korean girl in his ward that was living here in Smithfield, working at the Sunshine Terrace. We stopped and picked her up. He had some things of hers that he'd brought from Korea. And took her with us and went up to Preston to watch the parade. Nancy and Mark were both in the band. So as soon as the parade was over, then we come back, and Neil and I headed down to out to the field, and Kusin, this Korean girl, and Julie went with us, and we had the pump parked way down at the east end of the clay and went down there and shut her off and started moving pipe. This Korean girl thought that was something. The day that he came home from his mission, he had to move pipe. A little while, here come Nancy and here come Mark. And when we got ready, you had to go down in the creek and clean the moss off of the intake pipe. And gosh, it was right up around your waist. And so we used to take turns, and we'd just go down in there. And Nancy said, well, guess my turn. And away she went down in there and cleaned that off. Miss Cusini, she just couldn't understand that. A girl going right down in that creek, and I guess people didn't really think we raised these right or something. I'm going to tell this story. I'm not sure which year it was. Well, it was after Craig had gone, or anyway, Mark had been made a priest, and the dang little potlicker wouldn't go to church. He'd do everything in the world to keep him going to church. And I couldn't figure out why. Julie kept after me, and I said, oh, leave me alone, give me time, we get it, we'll get him. Well, that summer, and this had gone on for months, occasionally you get him there, but not very often, and I didn't like that. Now, he'd figure out every way in the world that he'd either end up milking Melvin's cows or changing sprinklers or something. And finally one day, one Saturday, Mark and I was out there moving pipe. And I give out. And I handed Mark a dollar, I believe, and said, go get us some drinks and something. But I'm going to lay down that shade I'm give out. When I feel better, then we'll move. But I've quit. Can't go no further. So he went and got us a drink, and I don't know, he might even got a hamburger. I remember the drinks, but anyway, he came back and whatever. And I was too tired to talk. And I was laying there, and he started to talk. And he started to tell me about a boy that was priest group leader. And he said to me, I just can't do it. That kid is still drunk, half drunk, Sunday morning, giving me instructions in my priesthood duties. And I said, good crime, Mark. Now I know what's the matter with you. I said, you're letting that kid who's got all these problems of his own drive you out of church. Now, that's absolutely ridiculous. What he does shouldn't have a thing to do with you. And I said, I went through the same thing. And I remember, and I've got that back on tape, about this man that I, when I went and asked my dad for permission to bypass fast meeting, because of three men. I said, good crime, Mark. I'd go there and I'd do what jobs he did. Well, what he asked you. And what he does shouldn't have a thing to do with you. And so after a good conversation along this line, why, next Sunday, Mark went to church. Never did have any more trouble with him going to church. He accepted my diagnosis of the thing. And I was... I was always glad I'd give out that day. Because if I hadn't give out, I might not have found out what was the matter. I'd tried for months to find out what was the trouble. And that was the day that I found out. That's been quite an advantage working with my kids. Here we are, the 25th of May, 1959, and last night Gary graduated from high school. Week ago he graduated from seminary. That makes all 10 kids graduating from seminary and also high school. And we're real pleased with this. Judy, on proofreading that, that was 1979, not 1959. You know, the year that Neil went on a mission, we did pit barbecues over to Sweetwater, his family. And by golly, that work, that was one of the few family projects. We pretty near worked everybody to death. Maybe we ought to put the formula in here. We'd take beef and pork and turkey. One time we even took a nice fat lamb, quartered it and cut it up and tied it and bundled and treated it the same way and cooked it in a pit. We take this meat, it's somewhere around 12 to 15 pounds. Now turkey you can go up to 25 and it won't hurt you. And have them thawed out, salt and pepper them good. And put them in one of these great big turkey bags, and then wrap it twice with aluminum foil, put it in a white cloth sack, and you get those white cloth sacks wet, and you can wrap the potatoes individually and put them in a white sack. In these turkey bags with your beef roast, fill those turkey bags up all the carrots you can get in them. My land. No matter how many carrots you put in, you won't have enough. Now, we have a hole out here that's about 4 feet deep and 4 feet wide and 6 feet long. And we build a fire in that dirt pit. It's a dirt pit just dug right in the ground. And we heap wood up in that, any kind of wood. Just common, ordinary wood. I used hardwood once time, like never got it done because it couldn't have got too much fire and couldn't get burnt. So I get along better just regular wood. But you don't want that cactus wood. We tried that down in the desert once and that don't work. And you got to have that pit in the dry ground. Now, I've tried it in the wet ground and that don't work. But you need dry ground. And heat that up, and when it gets down about ground level and get a good fire going, and it takes you about 3-4 hours, I like to get started about 6 o'clock and get in that pit by 10, and you're in pretty good shape. And you've got, as you get the coals burnt down to about ground level, then you start putting rocks on there, good old hard rocks about the size of a, no littler than a football, no bigger than a basketball. And you start putting them on there. And then you add a little coal wood on top to keep the fire going good. And when it burns down, you got about a foot of rock. And you got about 2 foot of, foot and a half, 2 foot of wood. Coals burning underneath those rocks. Those rocks are hot, and so's those coals. And you take good wet burlap and lay right over those hot rock and have them wet so they don't catch on fire. And then lay this meat that's in these white sacks, you know, right on top of that burlap. And then take a burlap and put over it and get out of there. Now you'll be just like... That's the nearest description of hell. That's sure hot in that pit. You don't wear a wristwatch. It gets too hot, you ruin them. And then you get out and throw in a 5-gallon bucket of water and then cover it up fast. Leave it there between 7 and 8 hours. You get in there and start going in by 10 o'clock. It'll take you a few minutes to get out, and you can get out about it. Start coming out around 6. You're just in fine shape. You've got your potatoes in there. We tried corn a time or two, but we don't like that as good as if you cook the corn in a hot kettle of water out here at the side. But anyway, then about 6 o'clock, you can bring that meat, those potatoes, carrots out of that pit, and it's just the finest meal on earth. We did this out to Sweetwater about 10-12 times, and my, we were just as thrilled we'd be if they didn't ask us the next year, because we was give out. And that's just the way, that was a quite an experience that year. Judy was back in Washington, D.C., and wasn't here for Neil's farewell. And she wrote one letter and said, how about me going on a mission? I'll be ready. I'll be old enough. 2nd day of March. She said, just think about it till I get home. So we thought about it. When she got home, I said, well, now, if you want to go on a mission, I better start talking to you like you're one of the boys. There's things you need to know. And I said, you'll need to make up your mind what you're going to do. In my lifetime, I've known many girls to get ready to go on a mission. And then some boy ask them to marry him, and then they don't know which way to go. So I said, you better think this over. Because once you sign to go, I expect you to go. Now, you don't have to go. So she came home at Christmas time, she said, what do you think? And I said, Judy, if you want to go on a mission, you better go talk to Bishop. She said, what'll it do with your finances? And I said, I don't really know. But you can't scare me at this stage of the game. But I said, there's one thing I want you to do and to get your mind straight on. Now, why don't you contact every boy that's going with you and you tell them you're thinking of a mission and give them a little time to think? Because one of those guys is going to get a little excited and ask you to marry him. I won't even do it before we start those papers. Because if you sign and tell that bishop you go and you fill out those papers and turn them in, then I expect you to go. That's just what I told your brothers, and that's just what I'm telling you. So she went and talked to Bishop and Bishop Karen, and she said, I'll let you know. And one night, one weekend, she wrote every boy she was going with a letter. Told them all she was thinking. She wrote every boy she was going with a letter. Told them all she was thinking of going on a mission. And nobody made any wavers. So she came home and told the bishop she'd go and got the papers, started filling them out. President Plowman saw me uptown one Saturday by noon. My landlord, he said, Bishop Karen said, Judy is thinking of a mission. And I said, yeah, she is. In fact, I think she'll tell us this weekend what she's going to do. Because I told her that I'd known a lot of girls get ready to go on a mission, and then some boy asked them to marry him, and then they don't know what the world to do. So we should know right quick. And he said, how are you going to... He said, Craig will go next summer, won't he, in 6 months from now? And I said, yeah, Craig's ready to go. I said, what are you going to do? You'll have three out. For a year and a half, you'll have two out for almost 2 years. And I said, yeah, I know. He said, now we'll give you some help. And I said, well, he said, do you think by any of the weird imagination that you can finance three of them? And I said, not me, we. The kids have all said they'll participate in this business. And I'm just dang fool enough to give it a try. And he said, my land, I appreciate your courage. And he said, where do you get the courage? And I said, I don't really know. I don't really know. But I said, I believe I've got it. He said, if you need help, come see me. And I said, well, you're my banker. You're also state president. He said, yeah, I know. I'm same guy. Now, if you need help, come see me. And I said, well, you're going to have to stay with me, banking business. And he said, oh, we'll go along with you. And so we started. Now, Craig, good old Craig, had worked that year real hard. And he had about $3,000. He helped put Judy into mission fields. Oh, our finances at times had just break right down, and I've gone up the bank board every dime that sent those kids that month, many times. I refinanced once in order to survive it, because there was just no other way. Now, I've borrowed money for more foolish things than that. But every month it was a struggle. We just struggled for everything we had. Now, the people were good. Tom Duran and his wife gave us $30 a month just about for 2 years. Because they couldn't figure out how we was making it. One Christmas, we had all three of those kids out. It was almost $200 showed up in either the mail, or we'd get checks in the mail to the Rawlins Missionary Fund. And some of them didn't even know where they come from. But we made it. Now, I don't believe you could scare me now. The main thing people ask, where did you get the courage to try? And I never really had an answer. Now, I know one spring Ray and Glenn and Jed were out of school and working and doing fine. So that Christmas time, they said, hey, you haven't said anything about some help. And I said, now, could you boys help me? Each one donate $200 in the months of March and April. That's while I get my crops in. And so they did that. The next year at the same time, their situation wasn't quite that good. And so I said to them, now President Plowman has asked if they could help us. And so far, the high priest Gorham, February, March, and April that year, gave $200 a month. And by golly, outside of that, now no people on earth worked harder and put more money into it than Mark and Craig and Gary. Neil was kind of the first of that, and he'd run a... They had things in pretty good shape when we headed out with Neil. But as that thing wore on, we give it just about all we had. Somebody said one day to a good friend of mine, they said, "What does it mean to give all you got to the church?" And this friend said, "Go follow Lindsay and Julia Rollins." And I was kind of pleased with his answer. I'm not sure that's right, but we give about everything we had. And we felt real good about it. Now, no sense working that hard and grumbling about it and lose the blessing of it. But from the year, about the 1st of August, 1977, till about the 1st of August, 1978, Neil and Judy and Craig completed their missions. And Neil and Mark left on a mission. And Neil and Judy were married in the temple. That year, as I ended up in a bishopric and helped figure out for me the last of 1978, I think there was 6 marriages in our ward that year, and only 2 in the temple, and that was Judy and Neil. Now we're real pleased with these kids. We're real pleased to cover the ground we've covered. I've said many times, I've been all over the world, pretty near, by proxy through my kids. Now Nancy's getting ready to go tomorrow, the 26th of May, 1979. Her and Karen Wadley going over to Germany to see Nada and Gary and the kids and have a nice trip over there for a couple of weeks. And that Julian I'd like to do in 1980. And maybe if we don't back out, we'll do her. Back on this work business, I didn't in any way want to leave out Nancy. She drove tractor for us. She's moved sprinkler pipe. She loaded pipe. She waited in the creek with the rest of us through these years. And I don't know, Julia said that's what bothered Nancy's had some back trouble, and she's blamed it on moving pipe, but I know one of those years, Brian Taggart burned up one of his tractors. He didn't have any way to pump, and so we went down to pump for him. I said, "Now my time I'll donate, what time I help tend that pump. All you'll have to do on the pump is keep petrol and oil in it. If you want to hire these kids, you can." So he hired Nancy and I left. Nancy and Mark was down there setting it up, and I generally wanted Mark there to start that pump, or me. Now, we'd had a little trouble before, but we, either one of us, we believed that there's no screw-up. Anyway, Mark was over there adjusting that pump and getting that ready to go, and Oh, there was two or three kids around the same age as Nancy, and they started down through the field moving pipe, and they couldn't keep up with her. And two of those boys is Jim McManus and Steve Merritt, I believe was the other one, came over to Mark and said, does she always go that fast moving pipe? And oh, no, Mark says, I've asked her to go a little slower tonight. And laughed. He got the biggest kick out of it. A year after the fall of Mark went on his mission, we went in on a sprinkler system for the creek place. That was the driest year known in history. And with this big drought on, why, they had pumped a lot of money in through the government ASC office to help. So we got in on that pump deal, and they pump out of the canal, and it comes down through. Now Neil Van Orden's in it, and Hugh Van Orden's in it, and Cecil Fever, Grant Chadwick, and Glenn Nelson, and this forms the company. And we've got a headline across that creek place, and my, that works fine. And so the first year we was trying it, I guess it was in the fall of 77 when we got that in. We got it going the spring of 78. Yeah, that's right. And so we got the sprinklers running, and Julia and Nancy and Gary was all there was to change that day, because I had to go to work. And they, I don't know, some went wrong. Whether they couldn't get this handle to shut the valve off, they couldn't get it to fit. And it's a kind of a guessing game, but anyway, and they tried and tried and tried, and finally Nancy went over and sat down to get her wind and said, this is the first time I've ever missed Mark. Because he could have done it. So then I got D. Nelson, and he came down and showed them how, and then they got by just fine. And all of them laughed about that. She said, that's the only time I ever missed Mark. But Mark wasn't here. I was thinking today that the year before Glenn went on his mission, I was working a lot of overtime. Ray was on his mission. Gosh, I'd work 12 hours every day out to work, and I'd leave here early in the morning, and I'd get home by 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And that's just the way it was. And all along into that summer, as I'd get out of the taxi cab, the lights would be on down in the cow barn, and the lights would go off, and kids and motorbikes and Hondas and Yamahas and squeaking chickens squawking going out of this yard that you wouldn't believe it. And I'd get to the barn, and just about halfway to the barn to see what was going on, and I'd meet Glenn, and I'd say, what's going on? Oh, he said nothing. And gosh, that was happening right along, and I just couldn't figure out what was going on. Finally, Julia told me that she said, I don't like those kids down there chicken fighting. Well, all the darn kids around was down there in our milk barn having chicken fights. I said to Glenn, now look, I furnished the barn, I furnished most of the chickens. Now, the least you could do is let me watch. Oh, no, he said, that hurt my conscience, let you watch. And I said, well, you haven't got a conscience. Oh, yes, he says, I have. Well, I never did get to see any of that. Anytime I'd show up, those kids would just scamper just like they'd been threatened. But that was quite a circus. And when I got home one night on time, why, there was Jed and Well, I had most of these little kids recruited, and Sid Rogers out here tromping my grain down east of the house and east of the barn, and I got out there to threaten their lives and got them out of there. And I began to badger Jed what he was doing out in that grain field. And he said, well, Sid come over and offered me $1 for that old rooster. And I said, hey, you'd have more trouble than you could handle. That's the rooster that Glenn's been using and whipped all the roosters around the valley and around the town, including Sid's. And you tell his fighting rooster, man, we'd have more than we could handle. I could tell this one story on May. I think I was about 12 years old when May got married. And they didn't tell me much about the marriage. And she told me she was getting married and gonna leave. She hadn't lived home the last year. She taught school up Glendale. Anyway, I browsed around to see what was going on, and May and Alan came up here, and Mother and went with them. I think Dad was able to go. He may have went, I don't know. Health wasn't very good, but anyway, I got home from school, and I discovered which room they was going to spend their wedding night. It was in this south room upstairs. They had an old cot in there. And I crawled under that bed and tied a sheep bell on that bed. And I was kind of enjoying the thoughts of that and the giggling a little. And I'll be darned if that Howard didn't get me to tell him what I'd done. And so then he called under and plugged the bell. Couple of 3 months later, I crawled under the bed, took bell, rag, and all out. I told May about that years later, but if I kept my mouth shut and wouldn't have told anybody, well, it might have caused a little more excitement than it did, but he crawled under and plugged that bell. Now, I thought that was terrible. Well, anyway.